from the intersection of technology and public accounting.
It's technology advice and insight you can trust.
This is Tech2Go.
Tech2Go is the CPA Technology Advisor's monthly podcast program, a fast-paced roundtable discussion with executive editor Greg LaFollette and regular columnist Brent Goodfellow, Dave McClure, and Randy Johnston. These thought leaders tackle current technology issues impacting the tax and accounting profession.
Welcome to Tech2Go. Are you ready to evolve? This Tech2Go podcast is brought to you by Orange Door, Inc., bringing you the next generation of tax software. Work from anywhere, collaborate with peers, and bring the power of Web 2.0 to your practice. Start your evolution at www.orangedoorinc.com. Your host for Tech2Go is Greg LaFollette. He is the executive editor of the CPA Technology Advisor, and he also serves as a senior manager of tax and technology consulting for Eide Bailly. He is an accomplished professional who is uniquely qualified to help firms navigate through the technology maze to find practical solutions that work. And now here's Greg to introduce you to the rest of the team on Tech2Go.
Hi, Greg LaFollette, Tech2Go, Episode 4, recorded April 24th. 2007. Some problems with Intuit's e-filing on April 17th, no less. My panelists are quite animated as we visit about some of the things that those Lacerte and ProSeries users are saying, how that whole thing came down, what happened, who did what to whom, and when. We move on to a good, solid discussion of smartphones, the opportunities, the pitfalls, and some of the tricks that different people are using. I listen to Brent Goodfellow as he shares 4 out of his top 5, or 5 out of his top 4, you'll have to listen to hear. We talk a little bit about the new HP iPac, and Randy Johnston shares some good news about his experience with the Jawbone noise-canceling headset. We then wrap that up with a good explanation, I believe, of the server setup requirements for Exchange in how to use ActiveSync for smartphones. We go back an episode or two and revisit the case of what happens in hosted Exchange. We had several listeners who had questions regarding exactly how hosted Exchange works, so we went back and had a better discussion, hopefully answered some more questions. And if you're interested in hosted Exchange, I think today's discussion will be helpful for you. We wrap up this month's Tech2Go with a discussion, as we promised, of another one of the elements of Microsoft Office 2007, specifically this time Microsoft Word. We talk about the file compatibility and some tables and the art features, smart arts and review tools, and the Microsoft Office Specialist Certification. And finally, at the end, we talk again more about that Microsoft Action Pack, some of the things that go in there, and what the different versions are on buying the new Vista product. So join me now as I introduce my guests for the April 2007 edition, Episode 4 of Tech2Go. Good morning, Greg LaFollette, Intersection Live, specifically today, Tech2Go for April. I've got the full panel here. Brent Goodfellow's here.
How are you doing, Greg?
Good morning. Thanks for joining us. Randy Johnston.
Good day, Greg.
Always good to have you. And Dave McClure is joining us via cell phone from the nation's capital. Is that right, David?
That is. Thanks, Greg. I'm actually sitting in a park in the heart of Washington, D.C. on probably one of the nicest days we've had in the year so far.
Well, if Marion Barry comes up and wants to sell you something, don't buy it. Okay. Well, guys, we want to talk a little bit about tax season. It's right after tax season. We're actually recording this on the 24th of April, so last week was about the end, or pretty close to the end. What did everybody hear about tax season? How did it go out in your part of the country, Brent?
Pretty smooth. Obviously there was a little FUPA at the end with electronic filing, and even CCH had just a little hiccup, nothing like Lacerte. And I didn't hear any problems with the Thompson e-file infrastructure at all.
Randy, did you hear anything?
You know, in general, I think most people, in fact, had a pretty smooth season. The reports really across most of the products were as good or better than normal. I thought it was pretty interesting that Intuit's now come up for their Lacerte and Pro Series family with starting actually yesterday, the 23rd, with a guarantee for professional filers for all electronic filing.
Talk to me a little bit about what that guarantee looks like.
Well, basically, you know, what they've done is said effective April 23rd, 2007, Intuit will offer Lacerte and Pro Series customers a guarantee of on-time submission of tax returns, and if late, reimbursed for paid e-file fees and any assessed late filing penalties. End quote.
So they're
really after
they're doing this year.
Yeah, well, actually, they said they wanted to have a guarantee a successful e-file experience for Lacerte and Pro Series customers. End quote there.
So we got that barn door closed and nailed shut right after all the horses got out, right?
Yeah, it looks like it. So in any case, it sounds like they had a little bit of database issue there, but trying to take action to amend that.
Well, you know, it was, they have at the Lacerte level particularly an incredibly loyal group of users. If they're as angry as I have ever seen them, we should probably just review the bidding a little bit. It appears that a week ago Sunday, things started slowing down, and then on Monday the 16th, things got slower and slower, and by afternoon on the 16th and pretty much all day on the 17th, it was somewhere near impossible to get the Intuit system to accept an e-file return. Is that pretty much accurate from what everybody else saw?
Yep.
Yeah, I think that would be accurate.
Yeah, so and obviously everybody lived through it, and but if you're managing a firm and you've got 40, 50, or 100, or 10, or whatever the number is, and you can't get them out the door, that means you have to print them and go chase down your clients, and then you've got a real, real mess on your hands. An apology at that point is nice, but boy, that's an awful lot of work for a firm to go through, and I think they are justifiably pretty angry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we also saw similar circumstances up in Canada where they basically had no e-filing systems for a week this year. I don't know if you'd noticed that, which affected them a fair bit as well.
And right, but they still have till the end of the month to file, though, right?
Indeed, they still had some windows, but they were down for about a month. I've actually seen some of the Lacerte users' comments and have asked for an audience with Intuit just to see what the explanation is.
Yeah, the Intuit people have been pretty forthcoming and trying to explain to users exactly what the problems are and what they're going to do. And I thought it was interesting that the first notification that I got on this was on Monday morning, relatively early Monday morning. I'm going to say 9:30 or 10 o'clock. It happened to be from somebody who worked in a development organization in one of the other companies. And it was the subject line was something like, "There but for the grace of God go I." And so the other companies all realized that this could have happened to anybody. It didn't. It happened this time. It happened to Intuit. But I don't know that practitioners in general understand how fragile things really can be from time to time.
There is one difference though with the Intuit situation and the other two of the big three, and that is Intuit uses they use the same infrastructure to support all of the hundreds of thousands of TurboTax users out there, and it's this ongoing debate about, you know, who are you serving? Are you serving the professional community, or are you serving the do-it-yourself tax prep community?
Right. Yeah, I don't know if technically that is really a problem for them or not, but it is certainly a big part of the perception. And I'm sure you're hearing that too, right, Randy?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, there is a concern, were the systems overrun because of the increased number of TurboTax filers, or, you know, should there have been different systems and so forth? And as the diagnostics on this are being done, and the guess is that it's actually a database overrun situation, it really smacks of the same type of problem that occurred, I think, on the approximately the same day for the BlackBerry folks, where, you know, really a innocent piece of software got overrun.
Yep, and I think in this case, when the numbers come out and we finally see what actually happened, we're going to find that it wasn't the TurboTax stuff after all. It was an unusually high number of returns filed by over on the ProTax side. But we're actually working on a piece right now where we can report to the readership of the CPA Technology Advisor exactly how many returns were filed by each platform over on the Thompson side and on the CCH side and on the Intuit side, and hopefully we'll be able to print that sometime later on this summer so everybody can see about how many returns everybody else did. That's all public information, so we're hoping we can get that from the vendors and we don't have to go to all the work to get a Freedom of Information request through the IRS, which we'll do if we have to.
I mean, I hope it comes out that way, but I'd be really surprised if the sheer numbers of TurboTax users didn't push, you know, that infrastructure over the top. And that's something that's unique to the Lacert system. It'll be interesting to see how it all comes out.
Right. Well, let's change gears here a little bit and jump over to the smartphone issue. We've been... Dave McClure, who kind of lives in this world. Dave, you've been chomping at the bit to talk about this for a long time, so now you're stuck out there on a park bench talking on a cell phone. What kind of phone is that? Do you like it? Are you happy with it?
Well, Greg, to be honest, it's a smartphone, and I hate it. I hate just about everything about it. It's old. It's crippled. This is now the fourth version of this phone I've had from the same service provider. All of them have simply rolled over and died in the middle of service. And I think as you look at the smartphone market, the problem is that the service providers can't make up their minds how committed they want to be to this class of phone. If you look, for example, right now, Singular, Verizon, Sprint are only introducing these at a very, very slow pace. And the ones they introduce generally are obsolete within a year. They're underpowered. The batteries aren't powered very well. Well, as you know, I've been writing about this for 14 years. I've been unhappy for 14 years.
So you qualify as a curmudgeon now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely, yes. But, you know, I think at some point someone has to decide, just, say, looking at the numbers of BlackBerries that are being sold, that this is an important market to them, and if they don't make that decision, I'm not sure where business users go.
Well, let's talk about what you use. I mean, so you've told me that you hate what you're using now, but my assumption is that you're using the least objectionable piece of equipment that you can find, right?
Yeah, but here's the problem. For example, I'm using a cell phone that is a pocket PC as opposed to a smartphone. And the difference is the pocket PC has a touch screen and you can actually run some additional programs on it as opposed to a smartphone which merely allows you to synchronize with your desktop and get your contacts and calendar. So my expectations are a little higher. But you know, I have to point out, for example, that this phone is using Microsoft's 2002 operating system as opposed to the 2006 operating system that is now available for these phones. There's no way to upgrade. The phone companies just simply have no interest in upgrading to the newer operating system. And that's one major bone of contention.
Their upgrade path is buy new hardware, right?
Yeah, their upgrade path is, and again, when you say buy new hardware, you're not talking about a $49 phone. You're talking about $700 to $800.
Dave, you're breaking up really bad. I think we're going to have to drop you off and have you come back in.
Well, I'll tell you what, I've made my major point about smartphones, and the other issue I want to make is they're really purple in terms of battery strength.
Dave, we have to drop you out. Your signal is really bad.
Okay.
Hang up and dial back in.
Has left.
There we go.
Dave's dropped out.
Right. Brent, what are you using for a phone? What do you carry now?
Well, before I tell you, can I give you my top five here?
Sure.
All right. The reason I say this is that this, I think, covers pretty much all the carriers and maybe all the platforms as well. So I'm going to start with the Trio 700P, the Palm Trio 700P.
Okay.
Then my number two is going to be the Motorola Q, and then I'm going to go with the T-Mobile Dash, and finally the BlackBerry. I guess I said five.
Four.
That's four. Well, I can't count. But
so David's exactly right. It's so bad that when we come up with our top five, we only had four.
And as far as what I carry the Motorola Q. Now, there's problems with, with every smartphone. There's certain things that are good, that work well, and then there are other things that don't work so well. The thing that I like about the Motorola Q is it's thin, it's fairly lightweight. I can put it in a shirt pocket. And I don't feel like I'm leaning to one side when I'm walking. It does a pretty good job of bringing email in as soon as it's received in my Outlook inbox, so I can stay current. The same with calendars, contact changes, and tasks. They all flow through using the Exchange Active Sync, so it keeps me in touch. And the things that I don't like about it, because it's a smartphone, you know, I don't have full versions of Word and Excel like the full pocket PC type phones do. But on the other hand, I'm not sure how valuable it is to try and edit or even read a spreadsheet on the size of the screens that you can get with these devices.
Agreed. So you carry the Q now. Randy, your phone in your pocket today is
also a Trio 700P, and I actually ran on the 700W for a while, but just frankly couldn't put up with the short battery life, simply because I couldn't get to a charger reliably in time to save the poor phone.
Sure.
So.
And I carry the 700P also. I wanted desperately to get the W. I waited and waited and waited, and when the W came out and I started reading the reviews, I was so disheartened to find so many people were so unimpressed by it. I have a P, and you know, I'm reasonably happy with it. There's certainly lots of things that it could do better. But the big problem to me, and I know if Dave could be here with us, he'd be talking about it too, is that we end up having to pick hardware based on who our carrier is, and our carriers don't know whether they're providing service or hardware or software or powers or what they're doing. We've just made a royal mess of this whole thing, haven't we?
Yeah, we'd have to agree. You know, the one, in fact, as you were naming your phones before, I thought you might go to the Samsung Blackjack, which is actually a pretty darn good design pocket PC family phone, but still old generation. You know, the one that I fully intend to give a whirl this summer when it's released is the HP iPac 500 phone, which looks much like the old Nokia units did. It's about 6 ounces. But it actually, I think, might just function well as a phone, but the key thing is it's got the new generation mobile fixed operating system on it. So we might get a little bit of a break at that point, but until the products are shipping, hard to say, and all the indicators are June's the time frame.
You know, it's interesting when you talk about the iPac. I remember back, and I believe I'm going to say 1998 or 1999, when my friend Brent Goodfellow brought me and showed me very proudly his first compact iPac. That iPac phone. It was like holding a pancake up to your face to make a phone call, but it was there, right, Brent?
Absolutely. You know, when you say pancake, you're talking about the size, and maybe you were referring to the heat too. You know, sometimes you felt like you were sunburned on one side of your face.
Exactly. Well, it's interesting stuff, and I think. You know, I see more and more practitioners trying to figure out how to do this, and in larger firms, where you've got a deployment process, and everybody gets a Trio or everybody gets a BlackBerry or something. It's a little easier, but there's an awful lot of small practitioners, two or three people in the shop. That come floating around. I watch Randy speak, and they're on him like locusts right afterwards, up there looking at every single piece of technology he's got, trying to figure out how to put these things together and how to make them run. Do you end up helping people get like ActiveSync set up, Brent? Is that easy or hard? What should a guy do?
Well, it's reasonably easy. And I say that, from my perspective. Obviously, for a non-technical person, it may be considered a little more difficult. Using Exchange ActiveSync in a secure way requires the installation of a certificate, and you can use a self-signed certificate or a private certificate, but it's generally better to go out and purchase one from someone like VeriSign that can issue that's recognized and can issue a certificate. And the smartphones and the pocket PC devices, they only recognize these certificates that have certain what are called certificate roots. So the certificate provider has to give you a certificate that will be recognized by the smartphone, so that you can communicate using SSL and getting your email in a secure channel versus a non-secure channel.
Yeah, so we're setting that ActiveSync up on my Trio, which I'm using. We did that certificate process, and Greg, you know me well enough. I actually had to have another technician help me because I just didn't get it.
Yep.
This is one of the areas we're going to talk about hosted Exchange, and I think we're going to kind of segue into that right now.
There's one point I'd like to make, maybe two, before we leave, Greg, and then we can set it aside. You are absolutely dead on the carrier problem here. You know, the new HP phone is a singular-based product, and, of course, the new Apple smartphone is going to be a singular-based product. So, unfortunately, carriers are going to drive this for a while.
If they're over on singular, that means the best they can do is that edge system, rather than
Amdo,
so it's about a third the speed, right?
Yep, so it absolutely, from a data perspective, is a problem as well. So one other new find, though, in preparing for our call today, which we bought and are using, is the new Bluetooth Jawbone headset. So if you guys hadn't run into the Jawbone, it is a military-grade noise-canceling technology, much better headset than most of the competitive noise-canceling or Bluetooth headsets that we'd run into so far.
Dave?
Has entered.
Welcome back, David. We've pretty well solved the entire cell phone thing. We'll keep you posted on which one you ought to get.
Oh, please do. I'd love to know.
We were just talking about Bluetooth headsets, and Randy was telling us that he really likes a new one called the Jabra. Have you run into that one?
Yeah, I've used the Jabra. I'm not a big fan of Bluetooth headsets, not because they don't work well, but rather because, again, you've got a battery life issue. If you're on a long drive trying to find a place to plug it in your car to recharge it, this really isn't feasible.
Yeah, and by the way, that was not Jabra. I've used those for a lot of years. This is Jawbone.
Oh, Jawbone. No, I haven't used that one.
As we talk about trying to implement active scent with a smartphone, with a Trio, to get this active scent set up, the problem is that you have to be in control of your own exchange server, or have someone who's running your exchange server who's familiar with what's going on. Now, Randy, you just did this, and I heard you say that you went and sought out some additional technical help to figure out how to implement this certificate process. Talk to me about that.
Well, basically, it was explained correctly before. We didn't want to use public certificates, so went out and purchased the certificate. And the process of getting the certificate installed on the phone, although not terribly difficult, took an extra step that I just hadn't expected. So had done the ActiveSync configuration, had applied the service pack on the servers, and still didn't get a connection to work right because of a misinstalled certificate. So once
before we go any farther, Dave, somehow your dial-in you're picking up so much crosstalk that we can hardly hear. So I'm going to have to ask you to drop out, dial back in one more time.
Okay, I'll tell you, Greg. I'm just going to go into listening mode unless I have something really important to say, and otherwise I'll see you guys next month. Great discussion, and I want to hear what you guys think I should buy for a smartphone.
Okay, thank you.
Well, let's move from the, as we're talking about this whole smartphone issue and how you set up smartphones with ActiveSync. We've determined that we need a certificate. So basically, if you're a small practitioner and you've got an exchange server sitting in your computer room and you're managing it yourself, or you've got a consultant to manage it, you're going to sit down with them and you're going to say to them, I need you to go to VeriSign and get me a certificate, which is not a big deal. You go to a website, you give me your credit card, it costs you, $15 for 2 years or something like that. Is that about right?
No. You're talking about an individual certificate. For a server certificate, VeriSign is going to be hundreds of dollars.
Ah.
And the best certificate bargain that I've seen out there that supports the smartphones is from a company called Komodo, and their certificate costs in the neighborhood of $100 a year, let's say.
Yeah, I was going to say, because that's what we found too, was Komodo was the best, and I thought it was $99.
Yep.
And that's KOM?
Or with a C. KOMODO.
Okay, KOMODO. Komodo.
But even with Komodo, I've found that if you have to tell them up front that you are going to be using the certificate to support Exchange ActiveSync, and they have to ensure that the certificate they send you has a root certificate that matches up with the root certificates that are built into these smartphone devices.
Okay. So this isn't go down to the Sprint store, pick it up, turn it on, and it's going to work.
Not if you want to do it in a secure mode.
Right.
Also, Small Business Server, which I know a lot of firms have invested in, the Internet Connection Wizard that is used in Small Business Server will help a non-technical person add a certificate and support Exchange Active Sync a lot easier than doing it kind of without small business server wizard.
Okay. So is this something that the average bear can attack?
I think so. I would say if they had invested in Small Business Server and they took our advice and went to Komodo and got a certificate that supports smartphones for their server, they could probably do it. There's some pretty good step-by-step instructions on the Komodo website in terms of preparing what's called a certificate request, a CRT. Which is sent to Komodo, and then Komodo has a responsibility to verify that the organization that's purchasing the certificate is a bona fide organization. So you're going to have to fax maybe a business license, maybe a Dow Jones report or something like
sure.
that to verify that you're a bona fide business.
So you're for real, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then once the certificate is issued, then you can complete the Internet Connection Wizard and Small Business Server and simply point to the certificate that Komodo sends you, and the wizard will install that for you and configure the Exchange Active Sync. And of course, you can do it without Small Business Server, but it's a little more technical.
Right. A couple of months ago, we talked a little bit about this concept of hosted exchange, and we had several notes back from people that indicated to me that we maybe went a little fast and didn't really explain to people this concept of hosted exchange, what that means, as opposed to having an ISP. And a lot of people said, well, you know, I have an ISP and they host my email. And I, you know, we're saying, well, this, you know, hosted exchange is obviously very much different than that.
Mm-hmm.
And people wanted to know, like, where's the server and do I own it and can I move it and things like that. So, you know, this is a hard thing. And Randy, you're probably, at least in my opinion, if not the best, certainly one of the best people in the profession to explain technical concepts in terms that the average small practitioner can understand. So walk us through hosted exchange.
All right. Yeah, I'd be happy to do that. And you might recall, for the listeners who were in on the last conversation, one of the hosted companies or sites that we talked about was a company called myhosting.com out of Toronto, which coincidentally has Komodo as one of their partners. So the certificate conversation we were just having is available from that vendor.
Okay.
But, you know, stepping back, the concept of hosting is that we don't want to own any of the technology that we're going to use. So fundamentally, what we're going to do is we're going to buy service, let's say it's email in this case, or more specifically, hosted exchange, Microsoft Exchange email hosted. We're going to license that technology from a provider. Now, that provider's responsibility is to go out and buy all the hardware and hook it all up and configure it, buy the appropriate licenses from Microsoft, and then make them available to us. And our responsibility becomes a lot more simplistic. All we really have to do is say, this is our domain name, and we'd like to have our email serviced here. And we can hook up through either a web browser, or we can configure our Outlook client to actually point to these hosted servers. Now, the most common way that this is done today with these hosted services is a web technology, HTTPS secure, using RPC, remote program call, or remote procedure call, I think is what that stands for. Don't have to worry about that technology so much as just to know that what it does is it lets your Outlook client talk securely to these file servers or exchange mail servers that are located in a data center somewhere. Now, the data center people typically have much more security in place. They have people that are monitoring these servers on a regular basis, and their goal in life is to make it very easy to set up an account, to administer the account through web browsers, and so forth. so the whole idea behind hosting is that we can give up all the responsibility for hardware, software, and the vendor actually has a responsibility for data. So if we take that outside of Exchange Email for just a minute, we have hosting commonly available from the big publishers, Thomson with their virtual office, for example, or CCH with their Global FX, or the Go System Tax, which is a hosted type of tax. Right. And in effect, we're not installing in those systems software locally. We're running it all from these servers from afar. So we have even a better advantage than, let's say, have maybe even an Outlook local client.
Right.
So the idea behind hosting, and I did it with my own K2 organization, because I looked at the dollars, and I said, look, I've got 15 users. I can go buy a server. I can go buy Exchange. I can buy Windows Server. Smarter move, of course, would be to use Small Business Server, which has Windows Server and Exchange all included, and to buy the licensing. And by the time I looked at all the costs of the hardware, the software, the installation, and not really having somebody in-house that I would consider an IT-capable maintainer, it just didn't make financial sense when I could go to a provider and for some monthly flat fee have a fairly large number of Exchange email accounts hosted.
Correct. Correct. Now, I would point out, Randy, that I use a service called AppRiver, and they do the same sorts of things.
Absolutely.
And all of them are pretty much the same. You're going to have to look at them and determine the service levels and things like that. But the prices are now, my price is $12.50 a month per mailbox, and that's unlimited size, and with a really, really good spam filter. And a lot of firms are paying $3-4 a month for spam filters anyway. So, it's with the hosted Exchange and the way that that Outlook synchronizes your email. I mean, I have all my email on my desktop. It all lives there. It all lives on my laptop, and it all lives at the server. I mean, I've got my email store is the most secure thing I have in all of my computing life, I think. Because it's backed up everywhere.
And these vendors, like you said, AppRiver, MyHosting, doesn't really matter who you're using. They really do have very reliable services. MyHosting I've been recommending since, I think, the year they were formed. Actually, the predecessor company even years before. But they've been around since 1997 doing this.
Right.
And in all those years of, dozens, if not hundreds, frankly, it's probably hundreds of clients on this particular vendor's services, I don't believe we've had a down window of more than about 15 minutes, and most of the time those tend to be near midnight local time.
Yeah.
So they take them down for a tiny bit of maintenance, but in terms of a hard stop, I believe we've only had one hard stop that was a period of about 2 hours.
Yeah, they're all they're a wonderful process, and I think a big thing for firms to think about, once you kind of get over that, and the setup, and I've watched firms use MyHosting. They have a wizard to set up this the HTTPS over RPC, all those initials that we throw out. There's a wizard, and I've watched firms set it up, and you answer a couple of questions, and it installs itself and points to their servers and does all the stuff, and away you go. And when you turn your machine on and launch Outlook, it automatically hooks to that server. It doesn't matter whether it's your server sitting in the next room or their server sitting in the next country. It works exactly the same.
That's right. And so for our team, for example, I actually helped Val Steed set up on his Trio ActiveSync to our hosted email. And, it was pretty interesting. Val's was just wanting to do a backflip, standing backflip, as soon as that happened, because it was like all of a sudden all the email, all of the calendar items and so forth that he'd been manually syncing with his device all of a sudden were happening in real time. And, you know, again, that's not a function of the Trio. That's a function of Exchange and ActiveSync working with those handheld devices out on the edge. So you can have this hosting facility do ActiveSync for you just like you could do it in-house.
Right. And some of them will actually buy the phone for you and configure it, put it in the mail, and send it to you.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to do it that way.
Yep.
Pretty amazing thing.
Of course, that means you'd have to give them your password.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, and this certificate thing comes into play a little bit here.
Right.
So it's a little on the crazy side.
Right.
Again, it's not fall off a log yet, but, you know, it's good enough that if you have someone with reasonably good IT competency, they can certainly get it done. And frankly, I know most of our listeners are just on the average smarter people. With their reading skills, they've got a pretty good chance of being successful too.
Well, that's true. And, you know, one of the things that I'm starting to say to people is, could you do this? Absolutely. Should you? Probably not, unless you really, really, really like it. Now, I mean, you know, I could paint my own house too. I probably wouldn't look very good, but I mean, I could do it, but I'm not going to. I'm going to hire somebody because they can do it better, faster, and do a better job, and my time is better spent doing something else.
Yeah,
in this case, almost anything else.
I would like to see less hobbyist computing occurring. There are a lot of people who are trying to support themselves on their computers or their phones or whatever. And frankly, their skills would be much better used practicing accounting or practicing law or whatever their profession is. And in fact, I would tell you that most of the time when I see people trying to practice their own computing, they've usually wasted more money and time than they would have spent. But I know it's hard because those are hard dollars. But the practical fact of the matter is letting a professional do it is usually going to be a better option for you.
Right. And you spend your time working with the tools that you work with every day.
Yeah. In fact, for myself personally, I used to do a whole lot more than I do now. I still do one or two or three attempts at any technology that I'm going to use because I want to see personally how it works. But that's only because I'm trying to teach other people about it. But day to day, I've got professional installers that stand behind me that do most of the key work.
Right.
So just like on the certificate, when I couldn't figure it out, I used my 5-minute rule. If I can't figure it out in 5 minutes, I ask for help. And if we can't figure it out in 15 minutes, we ask for our help beyond that.
Right. Let's segue in here real quick. We promised our listeners that we would spend a little bit of time in every episode talking about Office 07. And so we decided we were going to talk today a little bit about MS Word. There's some things that are the same and there's some things that are different. And obviously the big thing is the ribbon, but that's kind of across all of Microsoft Office 07. If we look just at Word, what kinds of things do we need to notify practicing accountants about Word 07, Randy? Any big roadblocks out there, anything that we have to tell them?
Well, I'm not sure I would call them roadblocks so much at this point, but there's certainly some operational issues to be concerned about. I think the first one, and we've seen enough occurrences of it already, that first you've got the file compatibility problems. So a file that's created in Microsoft Word 2007 may or may not be read in Word 2003. Now, there's plugins for Word 2003 that let you read most of the files, but we are seeing files that are not compatible. So that's kind of issue one and probably fairly big. In terms of general usage, again, you've got to think about training the people in advance for how to use the product. Now, the good news is Microsoft has several different help tools on their website to help with the learning experience, but we're again not recommending that you put this product in front of people cold because they will stumble and they'll waste a fair bit of time. So there are interactive flash applications that allow you to run Word 2003 or Excel 2003 commands and convert them to the new generation product.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I think a bit of a review on what is contained in the ribbons and the orientation will help you with the product. But I can tell you, yesterday I was working on a mail merge problem over the phone, and the stuff that was so obvious and visible in Word 2003, we eventually found about 10 minutes later in 2007 and realized you couldn't get to it in the same way. So things that you may know how to do, you're actually going to struggle a little bit with. Now, competitors have come out with different types of products where they're trying to work around the problems. I'm not sure this is a good choice, but for example, there's a plug-in product. I believe it's called the Ribbon X Customizer, which came out of China. It's $30. And basically what it does is it lets you put the old interface back on Word 2007.
You can pay extra to go backwards.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So, again, I'm not thinking that that's a real good strategy, but I also understand it from a training perspective because, again, to get your team up on the features, is it worth $30 a user to let them use some of the things the old way and then teach them the new interface? Maybe, maybe not.
Right.
Some other things that are clear inside the product that I think are much better to use, the new table features, the new art features are, I think, much cleaner. The header and footer maintenance seems to me to be much easier. You know, some of the built-in page layout pieces are better. I think the reviewing tools actually make a lot more sense where they've been clustered together as they are. But again, you're going to have a proactive effort to try to get people ready to use the product.
Incidentally, there is a certification path, if you will, for the Microsoft Office products. It's called the Microsoft Office Specialist, and that particular certification can be available to just knowledge workers, if you will. So you could be a Word specialist, for example. And the benefits of that is, you know, the individual would go through training and take an exam to become certified, but the process of going through the training and taking that exam and passing it is going to make them really astute and a good user of that particular Office product.
Talk to me, Brent. How difficult is that Microsoft Office Specialist? Is that a little bit like the old MCP certification? Is it more or less than that? Where does that fall?
It's a little bit less than that, I guess. They have, and this constantly changes. It's typical Microsoft, but currently in the Office track, in order to achieve what's called a master certification, then you have to successfully complete three required exams and one elective exam. And each exam has to do with an Office product. So right now, if you want this master certification, then you would have to pass an exam on Word, one on Excel, and one on PowerPoint, and then you could choose from Access or Outlook as the elective exam.
Okay.
There's some other tracks up there, and you can certainly just pass one exam. So, for example, what I'm suggesting here is if you've got a group of administrative people that constantly use Word, that would be the logical exam to direct those people to. Put them through the training and let them go ahead and sit for the exam. And, you know, even if they don't pass the exam, it gives them an opportunity to highlight their strengths and their weaknesses so that they can do more preparation, and that has a tendency, like all training does, to pay dividends across the organization.
And those exams are computer-based, given at ProMetrics, like all the rest of them, right?
Yep, exactly.
Okay. So most firms understand, after you listen to you talk to them a little bit, that this buddy help is the first line of defense,
Right.
In every firm, there's somebody there. If you go in and say, you know, who's the person that you talk to about an Excel problem, and they're always going, well, that's Ralph. He knows everything about Excel, or Sally knows everything about PowerPoint. And they're, you know, they become kind of the expert anyway. And if you kind of you're suggesting that you just kind of professionalize that a little bit and formalize it and round it out, and that's something that I think a firm can celebrate to their client base too, right?
Exactly. You know, it can pay dividends in that, for example, that particular staff person, once they become a specialist in, let's say, Word, now they're in a position where they can maybe do a training class for clients on Word. It's a good way to connect with your clients and to have those touch points that we all look for to marry our clients to us, you know.
Exactly. Randy, you see any firms doing that?
I do, and in fact, the recommendation of the Microsoft certification is excellent. I'm glad you mentioned that and thought of that. Yes, the firms that are doing this are actually using, and the words usually are champions of products. They're doing it with Microsoft Word. They're doing it with Outlook. They're doing it with Excel. They're doing it with their tax products, their audit products and so forth, practice. And literally what they're trying to do is have at least two people per location that have this additional knowledge. When there's additional training that's being offered or taken, those couple of people are almost always in the fray on this. They, in fact, do become the buddy. They become the go-to. And to a large degree, they become the key resource of whatever application they're responsible for in the firm. Very common strategy.
Sure. Okay. Well, let's wrap up here with just a quick discussion on another question that we get. And there's been about 9,000 articles written, I'm sure, Brent, on the flavors of Vista, and that's probably one article per flavor. There's probably not 9,000, but there's a lot of them. There's all kinds of different ways to buy Vista. What should firms do? We talked to them about the action pack. So, I mean, if a firm's out there, first of all, what are they getting in their action pack?
They are getting Vista Business Edition.
Okay, and what is that?
Well, it's probably essentially equivalent to what XP Professional was.
Okay.
It's going to be it's going to give them the ability to connect, obviously, to their domain. It's going to, you know, provide obviously the underlying technologies of Vista. So they're going to get search. They're going to get Internet Explorer 7. They're going to get the Aero desktop, the eye candy that we've read so much about.
Sure.
Assuming that they have the hardware to support it, which is another discussion.
Right.
They're going to get the mobility center and tablet PC support for laptop users. They're not going to get some of the media additions. So, for example, they're not going to get Media Center. You know, they're not going to have support for media extenders and that kind of thing, which, you know, if you think about it, is probably not a negative when it comes to using the operating system in a business setting.
Right, because they're most probably not using the Media Center functions anyway.
That,
which doesn't mean that they couldn't watch a DVD if they wanted to.
No, that's right.
That's right.
They're just not going to get the functionality of Media Center. They're also, interestingly enough, and I thought this was kind of surprising, they're not going to get the BitLocker encryption benefit, which is not part of Vista Business. It is part of Windows Vista Enterprise, which is yet another version of Vista for a business setting, if you will.
And Enterprise, and then there's Ultimate, right?
Yes, Enterprise and Ultimate, and we've missed a few. You know, we've got Home Basic, we've got Home Premium, we've got Vista Starter, and then we've got these N versions that are available only for the European Union, which, is a whole separate discussion.
Exactly. And most people are gonna get copies of this OS when they buy new machines, you know, they're gonna get them. What's Dell putting on their machines now?
Most of the machines coming out of Dell, you have a choice of Vista Home Basic or Vista Home Premium.
Uh-huh.
I understand that they're also going to start offering Vista Business, you know, again, but for directed towards business users.
Sure. And Linux, too, by the way.
Yeah, they actually, interestingly enough, both HP and Dell backed off of their positions to a degree, even though 20 million copies of Vista have been licensed, where there were only Vista versions of business machines available. Now the XPs are shipping again, but there is now a fresh January 2008 cutoff date for that. So that'll kind of be the new next deadline when XP is no longer an option.
Well,
right, and then we've got the other thing that's interesting to note here, and I understand the January date. You know, we've got Windows Server 2003 going into extended support, which is that second 5-year period,
right,
before it's completely obsoleted, if you will, as the release of what's the code name is Longhorn Server, but it's, if you want to think of it as Vista's server operating system, will be out in the fall.
Right.
Yep. So, and one other little oddity that, you know, I'm doing just because I wanted to have the experience of running on it is on my office desktop machine, I actually am running Vista Enterprise, and I was surprised at the number of feature differences throughout the product. Subtle things, you know, one that I noted yesterday to a technician was that the Quick Launch doesn't include Internet Explorer. You have to add Internet Explorer to the Quick Launch.
That's right. That's right. I'm actually also running Vista Enterprise on my office desktop, but I've installed every version of Vista and looked at every version of Vista. And the thing that I noticed that was interesting is Vista Enterprise doesn't automatically run the Aero interface. So even though the Aero interface is built into Vista Business, you know, with Vista Enterprise, it's not there. Thinking again, I guess, in Microsoft's thinking that Enterprise customers don't care about eye candy, they want to get the work done.
Yeah, that was a very interesting observation, too, and there were many, many things like that throughout Enterprise. Now, a subtlety that, you know, I think is going to be an important feature is the backup feature. You know, the ability of that to be in a ultimate version and not in a business version.
Right.
You know, that's another one that people will ask us about. Why should I buy ultimate? Is it worth the upgrade or not? And, you know, this security encryption of BitLocker being only in Enterprise and Ultimate, those are real keys if you need that feature. But there is a list of probably another dozen or 15 useful things in Ultimate. So, again, the struggle continues in my mind. Do I really, for small businesses, let business Vista Business ride as the recommendation, or is Vista Ultimate really the recommendation? And I'm still not clear on which one I'm going to do, so right now I'm still taking the safer mold of Ultimate because of the security piece.
Right, and we might want to add here that although Vista Business is the version of Vista that comes in the Action Pack, there is an option where those Action Pack subscribers can take their copy of Vista, their copies of Vista Business, and they can upgrade it to Vista Ultimate for, I believe it was $139. So the myriad of choices, it's almost getting to the point where you have to look through the feature list, determine which feature set is going to be best for you, and then choose that version of Vista. It's kind of like buying a car where you have to decide if you want leather seats or heated seats or sunroof or CD player or DVD player and on and on and
right,
on.
Right, and you have the Western package that includes some of those things. There is one other thing. I want to make sure that I understand this because I think I do, and I'm sure you guys can point me in the right direction. Assuming that I have a machine with Vista installed and I decide that I need all of the functionality of Ultimate, and so I go to Microsoft's website and I decide to upgrade and I buy Vista Ultimate and I get a license code, an activation code, all I have to do is type that in and it turns on, because what I've got is, I mean, I already have it, I just can't see it. Is that right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Unlike XP, if you entered the product key incorrectly in XP, you had to reinstall the operating system. With Windows Vista, you can actually go in and re-enter a product key. And so if you've entered a product key for, let's say, Vista Home Premium, you go to the Windows Marketplace website and you purchase an upgrade for Windows Vista Ultimate. You simply go into the properties of My Computer, which is now called Computer in Vista, and you can change the key. You can enter the new Ultimate key, and it, all of a sudden it lights up, if you will, all of those additional features that are available in Vista Ultimate.
So it's kind of no muss, no fuss. I don't have to reinstall or uninstall or worry about blowing away settings. I'm just turning things on.
Well, you know, if those things were not installed initially, it may ask you for your installation CD.
Oh, sure.
That it can put those additional features
right
on. But that's the extent of the fuss.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, one other small change, Greg, that I made on my home office was I had been running Vista Business and decided to blow it all away in effect and put Ultimate 64 on it, because it is 64-bit computing. And there was noticeable performance difference, which is contrarian to what I've been reading in a lot of the reviews. You know, they basically said not significant difference. Well, I beg to differ with them. I can give them at least one example where I'm probably getting a 30 or 40% uplift, and I'm running Vista Ultimate 64-bit edition with Office Enterprise 64-bit edition.
Uh-huh.
So I was amazed at the difference in performance. Exactly the same physical hardware running Vista with Office, Vista Business with Office 32, if you would, versus running Vista Ultimate 64 with Office 64.
Well, that's I'm glad you told me that, because I will tell you, Randy, I'm looking at a disk here that's that's Windows Vista Ultimate 64, and I'm looking at a brand new laptop that's got Centrino Core 2 Duo and 4 gig of RAM, and I'm going, I wonder if I should install this.
Well, now I'll tell you the rest of the story, because both myself and my son and most of my family are actually running 64-bit gear, because we've had it for some time. There are going to be applications that don't run well in the 32-bit emulation.
Right.
And it is clear with brand new updated antivirus that runs perfectly well on Windows Vista or Vista Business or Vista Ultimate or Vista Enterprise in the 32-bit mode, doesn't work on the 64-bit mode.
Sure.
So again, we think most of these things are temporary problems, but I think in the long haul you might just be surprised at how the 64-bit works on the 64-bit machine.
Well,
Greg, there's a couple of other quick points I want to make about Vista.
Sure.
I know we're getting close to the end of our time here. The
okay.
First one is, you know, we talked about, Randy and I both talked about Vista Enterprise. We probably better point out here that Vista Enterprise is really only available to volume license customers. You can't go out and buy that particular version of Vista, you know, retail, if you will. And the second point that I wanted to make is, and it hasn't changed, at least as far as I know, you have the option of buying an upgrade version of Vista. In other words, if you own a copy of XP, you can buy the upgrade version, which is significantly less expensive, and you can do a clean install, if you will, of that particular version of Vista. And the way you do that is you install it and you don't put the key in, and then you install it a second time, and the second time you run through the installation, you do put the upgrade key in, and effectively what it does is it sees the non-licensed installation of Vista as the operating system that you're upgrading from.
Interesting.
And it works very well, because that's how most of us were you know, able to do the installations that were needed. You know, it's quite different when you've got a pre-installed machine. In fact, son Dave last night looking over the shoulder as I was messing with the Enterprise version, and he'd also been working with me on the 64-bit version at home. He says, you know, it's just a lot easier to have the Vista pre-installed, isn't it? And it is. Trust us.
Right,
that one.
Right. Well, guys, I think we've reached the end of our time. We've been through a lot of stuff. I appreciate your time today. We'll get this. We'll have this posted in a couple of days, and I look forward to talking to you again in May. Safe travels to both of you, and have a great rest of the month of April.
That's the plan. Thanks.
Thank you, Greg.
Guys. Bye bye.
Good to talk to you.
That wraps up this edition of Tech to Go. Join the team around the table again next month for more technology advice and insight you can trust.
Tech2Go has been brought to you by Orange Door, Inc., bringing you the next generation of tax software. Work from anywhere, collaborate with peers, and bring the power of Web 2.0 to your practice. Start your evolution at www.orangedoorinc.com. And visit cpatechadvisor.com for more great podcast programs from the intersection of technology and public accounting.